Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is back, and he's got some news from Monticello, including a bridge repair, closing a local road for 6 weeks, and the Charter Review Commission meeting yesterday for its organizational meeting. A third No Kings rally is planned in Monticello this weekend as part of a national No Kings rally movement. Organizers here say rising costs for gas, electricity, and food are fueling frustration, and they're hoping to turn that frustration into a message of unity. Plus, the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela, and a new exhibition opening in Delaware County, bringing together 24 artists exploring memory, truth, and things left unsaid. It's coming up after this hour's news summary from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The Senate has voted for a package that funds most of the Department of Homeland Security. That's been shut down for more than 40 days as Democrats and Republicans disagreed over limits to federal immigration agents' operations. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says most departments within DHS will get paid.
This long overdue agreement funds TSA, the Coast Guard, FEMA, CISA, strengthens security at the border and the ports of entry, and keeps Americans safe. This could have been accomplished weeks ago if Republicans hadn't stood in the way.
But it won't fund most federal immigration operations. Senate Majority Leader John Thune.
They wanted an issue. Politics over policy. Self-interest over reform, pandering to their base over actually solving a problem. It's an appalling commentary on the state of the Democratic Party.
But the funding issue is not over. This measure has to go to the House for a vote before it is fully passed. Egypt, Pakistan, and Turkey are playing a role in efforts to end the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. President Trump has told reporters Iran is, quote, begging to make a deal. NPR's Aya Betrawi has more.
Iran says there are no negotiations with the U.S., and its list of conditions for halting the war include payments for damages and an end to attacks on Iranian-backed militias in the region. Trump, meanwhile, says he wants Iran to halt all nuclear enrichment and curb its missile and drone production. Egyptian Foreign Minister Badr Abdelhadi says Cairo is working to bridge existing gaps between the U.S. and Iran's positions.
We are supporting the peace initiative by President Trump to open the door for negotiations with the Iranian side.
He says Egypt is communicating directly with Iran's foreign ministry. Aya Batraoui, NPR News Dubai, with reporting by Ahmed Abu Hamda in Cairo.
Stocks opened lower this morning. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow slid more than 450 points in early trading.
Oil prices are up and stock prices are down nearly 4 weeks after the U.S. launched its war with Iran, scrambling global energy supplies. All the major stock indexes fell sharply on Thursday, with the Nasdaq dropping into correction territory, more than 10% below its recent peak. The spike in oil prices is particularly hard on Asian countries that rely heavily on imports from the Middle East. Japan's government warns those prices could put lasting pressure on inflation in the world's fourth largest economy. A federal judge says the online betting company DraftKings can continue using the term March Madness for now. That's despite a lawsuit from the NCAA, which says it tries to avoid any hint that it's on board with gambling around its college basketball tournament. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. A federal judge will hear arguments today from a Georgia county that is demanding the return of ballots that were cast in 2020. The FBI seized thousands of Fulton County ballots last January. President Trump has lied about winning the 2020 presidential election and the state of Georgia. He lost both in 2020. It was an extremely warm winter in the West as multiple states set new records this year. NPR's Rebecca Hersher reports.
The contiguous U.S. was nearly 5 degrees Fahrenheit hotter this winter compared to the country's average winter during the 20th century. That's according to the latest climate information released by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. 9 states had their warmest winters ever recorded, going back to 1895. Oregon, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, and Oklahoma. three of those states smashed their previous record by more than 2 degrees. Forecasters say 2026 is very likely to clock in as one of the seven warmest years for the planet as a whole. The Earth is rapidly warming up because humans are burning fossil fuels, which release pollution that traps extra heat in the Earth's atmosphere. Rebecca Hersher, NPR News.
Police in Hawaii say a helicopter on a tour crashed yesterday on the island of Kauai. Three people were killed and two others injured on a remote beach. Officials say the helicopter was operated by a company called Airborne Aviation. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. And returning to the studio live, it's Dan Hoost, who took a break, a well-deserved one last week, back from a nice away period to rest, relax, and enjoy, we hope.
And meet with some family that I haven't seen in a while. So,
well, great.
Yeah, did the Mansions, Museums, and Monuments tour in Washington, and it was really wonderful.
Great.
I had a good time. And since I'm also on the 250th Revolutionary War semi-quincentennial commission for the county, I got some pictures of things having to do with the Revolutionary War and George Washington. And so it was
sort of a working vacation, maybe a little.
Somewhat. It was fun, though. I love history. So,
well, back to his family here at Sullivan County Government. Of course, he's a communications director for Sullivan County and comes with some news from Monticello. One of the things we wanted to point out is some traffic and road closure information. It's spring, so the crews are out patching roads and building bridges, it looks like.
Yeah, it's already happening. I didn't realize we'd be starting this early, but we are.
Yeah, so a portion of Cooley Road north of Parksville, going to be closed for a minute.
Yeah, this is County Route 84. It basically takes you from Parksville to Willowemoc. It's called Cooley Road. I should find out why it's called that. So I assume it's a family name or something. But near the intersection with a smaller road called Flynn Road, we are replacing a bridge. It's a 90-year-old bridge that needs to be fully replaced, not just fixed. So that closure will begin on April 1st and last through mid-May, approximately 6 weeks, weather permitting. And we will completely replace that bridge. It's a fairly well-used road. A lot of people use it not just for local traffic, but also if you're traveling, for example, up to Frost Valley YMCA or up into the Catskills proper, a lot of people will take that road up and hook into the DeBruce Road and up along there and sort of a back way, as we call it, rather than Claryville. So be aware that for all of April and probably a good portion of May, that will be closed.
Well, and it is spring, and these things will be continuing to occur as crews get out there across the region to repair roads and bridges. We want to note also PennDOT in Pennsylvania closing Goose Pond Road for a bridge replacement in Salem Township in Wayne County. Information about both those on our website, wjffradio.org. But remember to respect the crews that are out there working to help you guys get around faster and better.
And there is a detour posted,
but
it's 4.5 miles, so just give yourself some extra time.
Be patient.
Yeah.
It's a lesson in patience.
Yes. Oh, boy. People love hearing that.
They do, right? Let's talk about the Charter Review Commission. They met yesterday for their organizational meeting. We've talked about the Charter Review Commission before, but let's remind folks what that commission does.
Yes. The Charter is Sullivan County's version of the U.S. Constitution. It's some could call it a founding document. It actually didn't exist until 1995 when the legislature replaced the Board of Supervisors as our form of government. Prior to that, starting in 1809, the town supervisors had run the county and there was not a charter. There was a code, but there was not a charter. Now there's a charter. And when that charter was created, the people who put that together said, you know, the smart thing is for us to review this every 10 years. This is a new form of government, and we may want to tweak things, and we need to leave ourselves the ability to do that. So every 10 years, the legislature is chartered with putting together a charter review commission. So there are now 9 members of that charter review commission. I think 7 of them met on Wednesday for their first inaugural organizational meeting, their charter meeting. Sorry, can't help myself. you missed me, didn't you, Jim?
The Dan jokes.
Yeah.
Are
so
back.
Yeah. So the commission basically introduced themselves to one another. These are people from all around the county representing each of the 9 legislative districts because they were chosen by each of the 9 legislators. They chose Bill Liblick of Swan Lake to be the chairman pro tem, meaning a temporary chairman, just to be able to conduct the meeting. So I think next meeting when they have hopefully all 9 of them there, that they will then actually select a permanent chair. Ken Walter of Grahamsville was also elected the parliamentarian. I'm guessing he'll probably stay that because that can be a tough job knowing Robert's rules of order.
What's the parliamentarian do again?
Make sure that the meeting is conducted according to the regulations. And in this case, they adopted Robert's rules of order. So, which he enjoys. I'm not so sure anyone else on the committee will. So he probably will stay that way, the parliamentarian. But they also decided that their regular meetings are going to be held the first Wednesday of every month at the Government Center from 4 to 6 p.m. in the hearing room, same room that the legislature meets in. I've already put that information up on the county website because there is a page devoted on the website at sullivanny.gov to the Charter Review Commission. And I expect that we will be hearing more from them as they begin what probably will be at least a year, maybe a 2-year long process.
And also want to talk about some other things coming up. The in-house hiring event, which is Tuesday. So this is a job fair for the county?
Yes. This is where show up, looking your best, and being ready to be interviewed on the spot. You might even be hired on the spot. It's through our Center for Workforce Development this Tuesday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Career Center, which is where the CWD is located. That's 50 North Street, just up the street from the Government Center in Monticello. We're going to have Delaware Valley Job Corps. We're going to have the Children's Home of Wyoming, which is helps children's services through our Department of Social Services, and Anytime Home Care. They're looking for drivers, cooks, counselors, personal care aides, in Job Corps' case, residential advisors. In the Children's Home case, they're looking for a family peer advocate. Not all of these positions require degrees or licensure. So if you're looking for a job, these people are looking for you because there is always a need. We continue to be, I'm very grateful for this, in a local economy where we have more jobs than people. I'd rather have it that way than the other way around where you have more people than jobs. I remember those days and a lot of people go hungry on that. But here if you're hungry for a job, there's probably a place you can find that meal.
There are also employment opportunities for the youth. Summer youth employment program applications are starting to be accepted.
Yeah. If you're between the ages of 14 and 20, even though 20 isn't technically a teenager anymore, but we still welcome you in our summer youth employment program. It is for a job for the summer, your typical teen jobs for the summer, and sometimes your atypical teen jobs for the summer. I know we've had teens working in radio before. I know that we have had folks working outside in our gardens and our parks, community gardens and parks, and a whole range of other things in office. And you can be earning, I believe it starts around $16 an hour for this, and especially if parents are like, what can I get my teen to do to make some money this summer? We stand ready to assist. This, again, is through our Center for Workforce Development. Information, including the application, is all online at sullivanny.gov. Just do a search for the Summer Youth Employment Program, or SYEP.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more from Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
President Trump issued an executive order on his first day back in office seeking to end birthright citizenship for the children of some immigrants. Every court that has considered the order so far has blocked it. Now, the Supreme Court will weigh in. I'm Washington correspondent Miles Parks. Join us for live special coverage and analysis from NPR News of the Supreme Court oral arguments over birthright citizenship.
Wednesday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, is here with us live in studio. I wanted to update folks on the RFP to explore the waste-to-energy facility, or sometimes what folks are calling an incinerator, part of the county's long-term waste management strategy. Now, we talked about this before at length. There was a draft RFP out in the fall. There's now an official RFP, request for proposals, out. Just what's the distinction here and what's the county looking for?
My understanding, I wasn't closely involved in this, but my understanding was the DEC required this draft RFP to sort of figure things out before we issued the official RFP. I don't know, and I couldn't say even if I did, if we've gotten any interest from any companies yet until we actually officially close the RFP period, which offhand, I can't remember if it's April or May when that happens. But this is for waste to energy or incinerator plant, as folks are calling it. And I'm not going to dance around the language. It probably sounds better, waste to energy, but yeah, it burns garbage. Mm-hmm. And legislators are, at least the majority, it seems at this point, are interested in exploring this. Some of the prior legislature, some of whom are current legislators still, had taken a tour. I went with them down to the densest part of Long Island in terms of population. And they have one of these plants right there in the middle of it all. And what legislators saw intrigued them. And they thought, well, maybe this could be one of the answers to not only Sullivan County's waste issues or disposal issues, but regional waste issues. That said, there are also disadvantages as well as advantages. These things need to be fully explored out. I know there are some in the community who are like, no, we don't want this. Let's not even talk about it further. But the legislature and the county's overall position is, no, this is worth talking about. This is worth figuring out, exploring, and then making an informed decision, not just dismissing it out of hand. So they're going to take a look at it. I tell people, though, and Josh, I think, said this as well, my boss, the county manager, that even if this were approved in the next year or two, it would probably be a decade-long project, which would have to jump through so many hoops that I'm actually rather amazed that there's any company willing to do this kind of thing, because it would take so long for them to make any money anyway. So, but that said, it is under discussion and review. If there are any respondents to this request for proposals, the legislature, along with Public Works and ultimately the public too, will review this, weigh in on it, determine whether they want to move forward or not.
Yeah, the proposals are due by June 5th.
Thank you.
Yeah, June 5th, 2026. There is a group of Sustainable Sullivan who published a letter in today's Sullivan County Democrat, or the Democrat published a letter to the editor today, signed on by 141 people, opposed to this idea. I will say that, you know, there is the opposition, which we have acknowledged, you have acknowledged here.
Yeah.
I think the good thing that we can all agree on here is that at the end of this letter, they're encouraging people to attend meetings of the legislature,
yep,
Public Works Committee, the Town of Thompson Board, the Monticello Board of Trustees. So to make that voice heard in the forums where they're going to be discussing this.
Absolutely. And Sustainable Sullivan, too, has engaged in dialogue with legislators and tends to continue doing so. And the county welcomes that. The position, I think, that they're taking of it needs to just – the conversation needs to end now on the waste-to-energy plant is not resonating with the majority of the legislature. But that doesn't mean that what they're saying is going unheard. And I think that – some of their principals have been there on a consistent basis to make sure that this this point of view is heard and ultimately listened to. And they may very well, in the end, be successful in that. I mean, again, I don't I don't have a horse in this race, other than I want people to come and interact with their legislature. So in that case, Sustainable and Sullivan and I are on the exact same page. But in terms of what's going to happen, I think legislators are like, we hear what you have to say. Now we want to hear on the other side of it what the company is going to propose, and also what the state is going to say, because mm-hmm. the DEC permits these things, it seems, but very heavily regulates them. And I'm not sure that county officials want to jump through all those hoops themselves. So we are not where anything is a done deal. I've been saying that from day one. Anyone who makes it sound like this is a fait accompli or that the legislature has made up their mind has not been attending legislative meetings and talking to legislators. And that's why I agree with Sustainable Sullivan. Come on to these meetings. Have your voice be heard. Pro, con, or someplace in between. Come talk to it, because these are the folks that you elected into office. They need to know how you feel, what you want to see happen in your community, and what you don't want to see happen in your community. And the wonderful thing about it is when you come to these meetings, you may have come for just, ask Kat Scott about this, you may have come for one particular reason, and then suddenly you find a whole other amount of things that you want to talk about and weigh in on. It's very empowering. And so, yeah, I join with Sustainable Sullivan in saying, come on and talk to your legislators and listen too. See what they're doing, okay, not just about the solid waste issue, but about a whole host of many other things that probably affect your life.
Conversation continues.
Yeah.
Want to bring to light a recognition of April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the things the county is doing.
Yeah, we have a child resource center that is housed in our public health building. These folks do a lot of work behind the scenes because they're working with children and families in very sensitive situations. So they can't be crowing about what they're doing because it involves people who whose privacy and security need to be protected. However, they are getting the word out about Child Abuse Awareness Month. I'm helping them with that. We've put some things out on social media. Every child deserves to feel safe, supported, and heard. That's the message. And so how can people, just the ordinary average citizen, help with that? Well, on April 1st, you can wear blue for National Child Abuse Awareness Day. If I can remember to do that, I am going to wear blue on April 1st. I'm notorious for not. St. Patrick's Day comes along. I was like, where's your green? That's right.
You are wearing green it today.
So donate a brand new stuffed animal to provide comfort to children during difficult moments. You can do that. We are going to have a drop box in our government center, but also at public health. Or you can join them Saturday, April 11th, from noon to 4 p.m. at the Galleria Mall in Middletown, where our folks will be alongside other children's advocacy centers sharing information, resources, and gifts.
Okay. And another piece of information there about agriculture, Sullivan County accepting agricultural district applications. Explain what the agricultural district is for folks.
Yes, an agricultural district is where we want to preserve and protect viable agricultural land that is in use or could potentially be in use. It's something that, for lack of a better term, we call open space protection, although it's not exactly that, because there can be open space that's not used for agriculture. This is specifically for agriculture, and they have to be predominantly viable agricultural land to be included, which means basically land, according to the state, land that's highly suitable for agricultural production and will continue to be economically feasible for such use if real property taxes, farm use restrictions, and speculative activities are limited to levels approximating those in commercial agricultural areas, not influenced by the proximity of non-agricultural development. All that is to say, because that was a lot to get out, my tongue is tired.
Well, say it in English, please. Yeah. Wow.
Is that property owners can apply in a 30-day window starting April 1st and ending April 30th to be included in these agricultural districts, which then goes before a group through Cornell Cooperative Extension, I believe, and actually I think we have an Ag and Farmland Protection Board, and then it goes to our county legislature as recommendations to be added, if the board has said so, to be put towards the agriculture districts, which already could contain thousands of acres in, I think, predominantly northwestern and sort of central Sullivan County. There's maps that we have because we have two districts, Districts 1 and District 4. And basically, being in the district means you're afforded benefits and protections to promote the continuation of farming and the preservation of agricultural land. For example, you're protected from unreasonably restrictive local laws, limitations on assessments for newly formed districts, and notification to local government of projects that could adversely affect that farmland. I don't know that there's any direct tax benefits. That's a little different from this, but a lot of people, we always have applicants. So if you're interested, it's Melinda Meadow at Cornell Cooperative Extension you want to get in touch with, 845-292-6180. That's 292-6180 at Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Reminding folks that Litter Pluck is launching April 1st. That's Wednesday.
I'm always excited about this. I am an avid person who picks up litter along my road. I'm always amazed, a little disappointed sometimes how much is there that people just carelessly toss out.
I was noticing that too on our road.
Yeah.
Really?
But of course, with all the snow we had too, there was plenty of litter that just got plowed off to the side of the road and you didn't realize was there. So I've already started picking some up. We encourage people throughout Sullivan County to do it, not only alongside their roads, but alongside their trails, alongside their shorelines of water bodies. We will take it, really no questions asked, as long as you say it's roadside litter and you've picked up our coupons that we have for it. We will take it at any solid waste transfer station of the county for free. We want everybody to join us in making Sullivan County cleaner and prettier. And encourage people, just don't litter. I know certain accidents happen. You're carrying something in the bed of your pickup and it flies out and you didn't even notice it. But most of what I see alongside the road looks like it was intentionally tossed. And we need to continually send a message to folks that we're not going to stand for that. We're going to clean up our roadsides. And the county is proud to be a partner in that, in taking it off your hands at no cost to you.
And just to clarify for folks, there are a couple of litter pickup initiatives in the area. There's the UDC's Upper Delaware Council's litter sweep, which is those litter squads that go across the region, the Upper Delaware Valley region, throughout April. This is the county's effort that goes on throughout the spring, summer, and into October. Is that
right? It goes right through October 31st. Some people ask, why don't you go longer than that all year round? But again, as we saw this past winter, it becomes impractical with all the snow at the least, but also we really don't want people walking along the sides of these icy, snowy roads picking up litter during that time. We want to happen during the nicer period of weather that hopefully we're going to have here shortly. And also, if you do it, make sure that you wear some reflective and brightly colored clothing so that people can see you. I've come across litter pluckers who are dressed a little less visibly, and it's like, whoop, I didn't mean to scare you into the ditch or anything because I just didn't see them there. So make sure that you're visible to the drivers if you're out on these roads, because we want you out there, but safely.
Well, here's an idea. You could volunteer for the UDC's litter sweep, which Radio Catskill is a media sponsor of, and you have the brightly colored shirt.
Do they give
shirt.
You one?
Yeah.
Ah.
Then you could just wear that all year long and support Litter Pluck with the county and just help get the litter out.
Mm-hmm. Right. That sounds like a great idea to me.
It's solutions-based journalism is what we have here, Dan. Let's talk about the free rabies clinic coming up on Thursday next week. Again, reminding folks to take their animals if they feel they need to get that shot, if they haven't had it already.
Yes. As in cats, dogs,
and
or
ferrets.
Ferrets. I've got you trained well, Tim.
But can you train a ferret?
I don't know that you can. So one day I sort of hope to find out, though. They fascinate me. They really do. So anyway, if you are needing to get your rabies vaccination update for your pets, or you don't know that they ever got it or don't know if they did, we have free rabies clinics coming up. The first one is Thursday, April 2nd from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Livingston Manor Firehouse. And then we have one for Wednesday, June 3rd, same time, at at Morningside Park in Hurleyville, and another all the way, I don't expect anyone to remember this, but I'll mention it anyway, Thursday, August 13th, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at Hanafy Park in Liberty. I wouldn't wait long. If you're in Liberty, Livingston Manor is not that far away. You don't have to pre-register. All you have to do is bring some ID that says you are a resident of Sullivan County.
And before we go, a reminder that legislative meetings for April are shifting a bit because of holidays.
Spring break. Yeah, people are going to be away on vacation, and it was talked about we were probably not going to be able to get quorums for our committees, even though they're smaller than our full boards. So the decision was made to shift everything back a week or forward. I don't know how that works. But in other words, instead of the first Thursday of April, which is the second, there will be no legislative meetings that day. It will now be the second Thursday of April, the 9th, where legislative meetings will go. And then, of course, we'll have another round of committee meetings on the 16th, and then the full board meeting on the 23rd of April.
All right. But even though there's no legislative meeting next Thursday, we'll still see you on Friday.
I will be here. I have no idea what I'll be talking about. No, I'm sure there will be things to talk about.
Dress in your Easter finest.
That's true. Yes. Yes. I will wear something brightly colored. I do actually have an outfit that people tell me make me look like an Easter egg.
If you remember.
Yeah, if I remember, right.
Dan, who's from Sullivan County Government, Communications Director, thank you for being here, sir. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, why organizers say the Monticello No Kings rally tomorrow is about more than politics and how they hope it will bring people in the community together. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on This American Life, M. Gessen comes back to our show with a true crime story that happened in their own family.
She wrote, "I beg you please to help me get my son back, or to at least speak to him. Please do not tell them I have written to you. If you're unable to help me, then just ignore my message."
That story, by the way, comes from Serial, the people who literally invented the true crime podcast. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
This week on Science Friday, bird flu has sort of flown off the national news radar. Is it still a risk?
We are letting this virus have 1,000 shots on goal every day. Maybe it takes one in a billion to finally make it a pandemic, but we're letting it have that opportunity.
Plus, how flowers shaped the evolution of life on Earth. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. No Kings rallies are planned across the country this weekend, and the third No Kings rally in Sullivan County aims to channel frustration over rising costs into a broader call for community unity. Radio Catskill's Jason Dole spoke with Ann Hart of We Are One Sullivan, an organizer of the No Kings event in Monticello tomorrow.
We want to show the people in our community that there is a resistance to what's going on in our country right now, and that we believe in a different kind of country. We grew up in a different kind of country, and we're not particularly pleased with the direction now. Gas prices are incredible. Electricity prices are incredible. The cost of food is still incredible. It's basically getting more and more difficult for anybody to live a decent life, and a lot of that is directly related to the current administration in Washington. It's enough.
You want to just talk a little bit about what's happening at the national level, what's happening with the national leadership, and how is that impacting folks locally?
Well, I think it's impacting folks locally in terms of pretty much every aspect of their life. Everything is more expensive. People are very concerned about a war that has been started that has put gas prices through the roof. I got gas yesterday. It was almost $4 a gallon. I mean, how can people go to work in a rural community like this when, you know, it's going to take a tank of gas practically to get from one side to the other, depending on your vehicle? I mean, we need to be able to live together in harmony. Government is supposed to be for people, not against people. It's not supposed to cost money to participate in government. And, you know, we really want people to be able to participate in a way at any income level, no matter what your ideology, where you want. We want people to have a good life.
clearly this is a political event, but the vibe that I've gotten from the coverage, nationwide coverage of No King's event seems to be, if it's possible, be a little less pointedly partisan, that it's trying to reach across some of those preconceived barriers. Is that happening in Sullivan County? Are you getting a plurality of folks?
We certainly hope so, because this is really about our communities, our friends, our family. It's about the place we live and how we can all live together. We certainly hope so. I'm sure there are haters out there. But for instance, every Saturday, a small group of people are out there with signs in front of the courthouse in Monticello, and they get positive response. They get very, very little negative response from the people who drive by, and they're a fixture there right now. So I think, you know, whether people are publicly going to say how they feel about things or whether they're not, this is a chance to show that members of your community are with you. We stand by you. We're concerned. You can look at our co-sponsors, who are NAACP Chapter 2187B, SALT, Committee for Equity and Justice, Catskills Pride and Trans Support Initiative. These are all groups who care about everybody in our community, not just their particular interest group or political party or whatever you want to call it. This is really about all of us living in a community that helps all of us.
What does, if anything, No Kings 3 mean in the context of it being an election year?
There's not a direct connection to people running for office or running for re-election. We've invited all of our local, elected officials to attend. They either will or they will not. But it's not a political campaign event. It's not meant to be. We're not allowed to let candidates campaign tomorrow. Can't do it. Those are the rules. But, you know, we certainly want them to be there and to, you know, see what we're about and see that, you know, we care about what's going on in our country. So in a way, it's showing elected officials what we care about and that we care, but not directly related at all to anybody's election or reelection.
Right. And so the upcoming elections aren't front of mind for people that are making the effort to get out there.
No, not at all.
Anything that we didn't get to that you want to get to?
I just like to say one thing. I've been privileged to attend several meetings with AFT President Randy Weingarten. And one of the things she said really stuck with me, and it was particularly about this event, but it's something that we all should remember. And what she said was, America is a country where people take care of each other. And that should be our country, and that should be our goal, that we all take care of each other.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come out here to the studio and talk to us about this.
Oh, thank you so much.
Best of luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Jason Dole speaking to Ann Hart of We Are One Sullivan about the No Kings rally planned in Monticello tomorrow. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast, is out today, and we'll get a preview from Tom Candela next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, I'm Kimberly Izar, host of Farming Country. This week, bluebirds and robins are a few of the birds emerging this spring. Maura Muller of the Sullivan County Audubon Society shares her favorite birding tips. And warmer days means maple sapping has kicked off at Brookside Farm in Delhi.
The old saying is make hay when the sun shines. Well, we gotta make syrup when the weather permits too.
That's this week on Farming Country, Saturday at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This week on CatsCast, a roundtable discussion with the creators of We Be Griots, a new series from the Margaret Wade Lewis Center focused on Black narratives from the Hudson Valley.
And that's a heavy burden to have to carry, but what you resist persists. And so it's like we're resisting having the conversation. If we resist learning about it, then we don't get past it. We just stay stuck.
Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, the latest episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, drops, and we get the chance to talk to its host and producer, Tom Candela, for a preview. Tom is here live in studio. Hello, sir.
Good morning again.
How are you? And who do we have on this episode of Curtain Call?
Okay, so things are starting to really kick up here our theater community. This weekend, the 29th, on Sunday, Farm Arts Collective starts their feature, My Bookish Friends, A Literary Afternoon. And one of the guests at that event, her name is Karen Malpede. She's a playwright, director, memoirist, and Theater 3 collaborative co-founder. She appears on the show. We talk a lot about her book, Last Radiance, Radical Lives, Bright Deaths, which will be featured at that event at Farm Arts this weekend on Sunday. So we talked a lot about her book and what, you know, where that came from, and about her theater pieces, The Blue Valiant. So
excellent.
It's a really good episode. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, here's a preview of Curtain Call again. The full episode is at WJFFradio.org.
You should listen.
So you should listen to all of it, but let's listen to a part of it now from Tom Candela. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Today, my guest has spent a lifetime exploring what theater can be and what it can do. Karen Malpied is a playwright, a director, and co-founder of Theater 3 Collaborative, and her work has consistently engaged with some of the most urgent issues of our time. Her latest work, Last Radiance, Radical Lives, Bright Deaths, is both deeply personal and historically expansive, a memoir that traces a life lived in the avant-garde theater community. In fact, she will be appearing at Farm Arts Collective as part of their literary series, My Bookish Friends, A Literary Afternoon. Karen, I want to welcome you to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much, Tom. I'm delighted to be with you.
So, Karen, as I mentioned in that opening introduction there, you have had a lifetime in the theater. A lot of it centered around some of your environmental concerns, the human experience. Certainly you have some politics mixed in there. You also are a poet. But at the bottom line, what drew you towards theater as a form to express all those things?
I think it was studying the Abbey Theater as an undergraduate. Mm-hmm. Irish literature was the rage when I was an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin. But the University of Wisconsin, like Columbia and Berkeley, was a center of anti-war activity against the war in Vietnam.
Okay. So you're there at the University of Wisconsin, and you get involved in some of these, I would guess, some activism. But still, what was it that said to you, okay, theater is a way for me to bring this awareness to the masses?
Well, the Abbey Theater was an engaged theater, mm-hmm. trying to bring a sense of freedom to the Irish people who had been colonized for hundreds of years by the English, starved to death during the famine. So it was the combination of really in-depth studying of dramatic literature. So that's when it came together, I think, that theater could be a galvanizing force for a new and powerful vision.
I see.
Collective vision. I then wrote, my very first book was called People's Theater in America. Mm-hmm. And it was a history of engaged or left-wing or radical theater from 1929 to 1972 when the book was published.
I want to talk a little bit now, Karen, about Last Radiance. You mentioned that it came out of sort of the grief or the loss of your father. Give us a little bit more about what made you sit down and write this book.
When George was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, I knew then that my father had died of cancer. My dear friend Julian Beck had died of cancer. Another mentor of mine and a remarkable woman, Barbara Deming, had died of cancer. And George was now afflicted. George said to me often, "I'm afraid of dying." And I said to him, the only thing I knew how to say, "You will not be alone." Mm-hmm. And George died in my arm. He was not alone. And his last words then were to me, were, "That was good." He died the next night in my arms. And in the book, I kind of spin that out, that what did he mean by that? And I go on about all the things we did together that were good. So the book documents these extraordinary people and how they lived and how they died and the work they did at the very end of their lives.
So it was beyond just a memoir, this book, Last Radiance, for you. It was sort of a memory of not only your father, but of George and other people in your life as well.
Yeah,
and dealing with your own grief, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then all the work we did at Theater 3 Collaborative, but also his life, his incredibly creative life.
Sure.
I was writing this book while I was in deepest grief, and I wanted to break down the barriers, to write through the things that are so difficult to talk about. I had written prose before, but I had never written anything as personal before, except what came into my plays, but then it came through characters. Mm-hmm. This was clearly me.
Let me once again mention that you will be appearing at Farm Arts Collective coming up on March 29th, and you will be talking about your book and, I guess, reading parts from it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Is it going to be a question and answer afterwards?
Oh, I think so. I think Brad and I are going to do a lot of relating to the audience, question and answers. The books will be there for sale. My book is available from any place where you order books. You can order it from Barnes & Noble, from Amazon, from wherever you buy books.
Yes, and again, the title of that book is Last Radiance, Radical Lives, Bright Deaths. All right, let's talk now about Blue Valiant, because I did have the opportunity to watch it in its entirety, and it can be found on YouTube. I'm going to talk about George first. What struck me about him for most of the piece, he's sitting on stage. Mm-hmm. But even in his sitting, quiet moments, not saying anything, you're drawn to him. And he has a presence that fills the screen.
Yep.
He's just there.
Yep. I called him an oracular presence. He became this caring gaze that mm-hmm. looked over the rest of the action the whole time. People say, George always made me feel more alive. People say, nobody listened as closely as George to me, on stage or off. He was a rare presence in life.
Yeah.
And that shows so clearly in this
piece.
Performance.
Yeah, I wholly agree. He's on stage the entire time, really. And even when he is not the focus of a scene, he's there, and you feel his presence, and I think it adds to the power of Kathleen's speeches, of him being there. And I have to mention that this was written by you, Blue Valiant, as well as directed by you for this performance at Farm Arts Collective.
Yeah.
All right, and Kathleen's performance, we have to mention her, too, because she was just brilliant. She has these three monologues, one of which she is reliving the history with her daughter from a very young age through her growing up. And she plays it. It's almost like this schizophrenic going back and forth between two voices, but each one is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's speaking when.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
thought it was brilliant. It was a brilliant piece of acting on our part, but also a brilliant piece of writing. What was the process of that particular monologue? Was it directed that way, or was it Kathleen?
I think it was her and me.
Okay.
I had worked with Kathy before in a play called Prophecy that George was also in, and they played husband and wife. So I knew her, and I knew what she could do in the same way I knew what George could do, right? So, like all great actors, she can do anything.
Yeah.
But we're both mothers of daughters, and the daughter in the play, the memories of the daughter, is how did this golden girl, who seemed to have everything, her parents had money, she had the best education, and her daughter has recently died. So Hannah is remembering the beauty of this child, her love for this child, the sparkly energy of the child, and all the potential, everything that was there in the girl, and then the loss.
Yeah, and it was beautifully done. You could feel the rage of the daughter in it, the desperation of the mother trying to reach her and trying to get her better.
Yeah, well, Kathy is a marvelous, marvelous actor,
mm-hmm.
a marvelous, marvelous person. And she and George loved to work together. And I think that, and she would say this too, that the fact that George, who was on stage while she was doing the monologues, that his attention that he paid to her really allowed her to be so free with those monologues and to go to the depths of emotion and the heights of love. And all she goes through all the emotions in those monologues. And it's partly because she's being held in the gaze of George.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that.
But for Kathy, George's presence was key and remains key to her. I wrote the play before George's cancer diagnosis. If I had known what I was going to lose, I probably couldn't have written the play, right?
So watching that now, that you have lost them, how does that shape the experience of the Blue Valiant performance?
For one thing, I'm so glad we got to do it and that it's on film. But anybody who's lost someone who they loved so dearly, knowing that they're going to die has nothing to do with their death, with how you feel once they've died. I mean, you cannot and should not, I think, try to anticipate grief. I think one has to walk through grief, and I talk about that, my trip to the underworld, my many things that I tried to do to deal with grief. Grief is a slayer. It's a difficult. I also say, though, in the book that grief is love. The more you have loved, the more you will grieve.
Sure.
And so most of us choose love and accept or get hit with the grief.
Yeah, makes total sense when you think about it like that, that grief. In order to grieve, to truly grieve the loss, you have to have loved first, you know, to understand what you have lost. So it was really a powerful piece. Blue Valiant, it is available, as I said, on YouTube. Just search Blue Valiant, the play, the film.
Yeah.
Well, for people who want to learn more about Karen's work, you could actually come and see her real soon. Last Radiance, Radical Lives, Bright Deaths is the name of the book. The author is our guest today, Karen Malpied. And that book can be found where all books are sold. And you can come and talk to Karen and get your book signed on the 29th over at Farm Arts Collective. I believe that event starts around 2 o'clock.
And the full episode of Curtain Call is available at our website, wjffradio.org. Coming up, a preview of a new multidisciplinary exhibition opening tomorrow in Roxbury, New York. Stay with us. This is Radio Chatskill.
On this week's On the Media, the New York Times sued the Pentagon to get its reporters back in the building and won. The Pentagon said, not so fast.
A spokesman said yesterday an area of the building known as Correspondence Corridor, which reporters have used for decades to cover the DOD, will close immediately.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A new exhibition opening this weekend in Delaware County brings together 24 artists exploring memory, truth, and things left unsaid. Things I Never Said is the multidisciplinary show featuring 24 local and regional artists opening with a reception tomorrow at the Walter Mead Gallery at the Roxbury Arts Group. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke with the Roxbury Art Group's Ursula Hudak about the ideas behind the show and what visitors can expect.
Today we have Roxbury Creative Opportunities Coordinator Ursula Hudak here. And she's going to be telling us about the upcoming exhibition they're having in Roxbury on the 28th of March. So, Ursula, tell us about this exhibit. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, thanks, Valerie, for having me. Yeah, I'm very excited about this group exhibition. Our participants joined the exhibition through an open call, and we were very excited to see what applications we received. I think people were really resonating with the theme, which was of memory, truth, and the power of the human voice.
Tell us the name of the exhibit.
Yeah. So the show is named The Things I Never Said, exploring themes of memory, truth, and the power of the human voice. We found that this really resonated with quite a lot of the applicants, and the way that they interpreted it was very interesting. A lot of it has to do with memory and remembrance versus reliving of things that were traumatic. Overall, I really think that a lot of the accepted applications kind of show just how art can be cathartic and kind of help people reclaim an inner power of sorts. But we're very excited. It's going to be multiple mediums, so collage, cold wax, photography, painting, but then also textile works, sculpture works, ceramic and even a video and projected works.
And how many artists are participating?
So it's going to be 24 artists.
Wow, that's a nice group.
Yeah, and a lot of them are pretty local. I mean, most of them are within the county. Some are from, I think the East Coast in general and New York in general, but it's a pretty good mix.
And I liked this quote here. It explores the blurry line between remembrance and reliving.
Right, yeah. It's kind of how do we remember and honor things that have happened to us, but also how do we move on from things that have been harmful in our lives? And, you know, it's a very difficult question and one that I think really makes sense that the easiest way to kind of express that is in art. And, you know, a lot of these pieces, I at least had a very emotional response to them. So I think it's going to be a very affecting exhibition.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the previous exhibit you had up at Headwaters about a building.
That's the current show on show, which is Interiors, Exteriors.
Yeah.
Yes. I think this is a little bit more so kind of interpersonal and internal. But I do, there is a similar theme of kind of what is it like, how do we explore these spaces that are important to us, both in the internal areas, like living areas, and external, and how do these places really affect us and, have meaning for us. I think it's a very good kind of co-showing.
And also, one of the other things that occurred to me when we talk about our experiences, whether they're joyous ones or painful ones, is the ability of expressing those feelings with art versus words. Well, I guess that's why there's art therapy.
Yeah, and we have a series right now of Art for Wellness workshops at Headwaters with my colleague Kristen Stevenson, because she realized that, you know, especially in long winters such as this one, it's really helpful for people to be able to get out of the house and enjoy art for what it does in terms of both encouraging us to express these kind of things that are difficult to deal with, but also in general work through our subconscious and enjoy art and tactile experiences.
And what is the website where folks could get information both about the Roxbury site and the Stamford site at Headwaters?
Mm-hmm. That's roxburyartsgroup.org, and we have there different categories that people can look through for our performances and events, our workshops, and our exhibitions. We have that all there, especially now because we are about to come out with our program. So if you want to see all of the exhibitions, workshops, and opportunities we have in the coming year, that'll all be on the site there.
And you have an overflowing amount of wonderful things offered, I notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very excited about this year. We think it's going to be a great year for our programming. We have our grant award ceremony beginning of May to celebrate the people who received our grant. It was a very big year for our grant. We're just so happy to be able to offer a whole list of incredible performances, workshops, and exhibitions for the community.
Well, I know you've been busy all winter long. You got down to work.
Yep, I did.
Well, this was great, Ursula. And let's just repeat. The name of the exhibit is Things I Never Said, which many of us can relate to. And the show begins with a reception on Saturday, the 28th of March, and it runs through the 23rd of May.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we hope to see everyone there.
Okay. Well, enjoy.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi, too. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Be sure to listen to the local edition tonight at 6. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.
Support comes from Catskill Art Space in Livingston Manor, offering exhibitions, performances, screenings, and more.
with long-term installations from James Turrell and Saul LeWitt. Open year-round. CatskillArtspace.org.
It's award season, and the winner of the first annual Folk Album of the Year award has just been announced. So, next time here on The Waggle of the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll hear a couple of tracks from the winner. So join me, please, to hear the 2025 Folk Album of the Year award winner on Sunday afternoon at 3.
This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Well, you may have noticed it's a little cooler. Breezy today, high only 44. Tonight's low 19. It will be pretty cold tomorrow, too. High of only 34. Tomorrow night's low 20, but warming back up to 48 for Sunday and partly sunny. Not as cool Monday, 58, and back to the 60s by Tuesday and Wednesday. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.